This is Line One, your health connection, a weekly program produced at the studios of KSKA. Each week, KSKA's host, Dr. Thad Woodard, puts you in touch with local and national experts in a variety of health and family issues. Opinions expressed are those of the host, guest, and callers, and do not represent those of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. Here's your host, Dr. Thad Woodard.
Good afternoon. Welcome once again to Line One, your health connection, and I feel obliged to follow through again. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but a couple weeks ago I mentioned that maybe the incidence of autism is not really increasing. I'm not taking a stand one way or the other. I'm just saying there's significant evidence to suggest it may not be, despite common beliefs. And I was looking at another article, actually a review of an article, by a physician at the CDC, that the article itself was looking at thimerosal, which is the mercury-containing adjuvant that had been in some of the vaccines in the past. And he was reviewing this article, and the point that he was making is correlation does not mean causation, which is something we talked about when I was talking about logical fallacies in the past. I tell patients all the time that just because something happens closely related in time doesn't mean it necessarily caused something. And what he did is he made another point that I think is really good. If you look at the incidence of autism, and he's got a graph in the paper, and then you look at the incidence or the link that to the number of compact disc sales in the same period of time between 1980 and 1996, it almost parallels it exactly. And yet no one out there that I know of is blaming compact disc sales on autism. And then we also know that as thimerosal was removed from vaccines, the apparent incidence of autism has continued to rise, suggesting in another way among many now that autism is not linked to thimerosal or any vaccine. His final statements, I think, are most important, and I'm going to go ahead and read this. The downside of that belief has led to the belief that something's wrong with the vaccines causing autism has led to a number of problems. First, it's diverted attention and resources away from research and a better understanding of the real causes of autism. Second, it has frightened some parents away from vaccines, requiring all of us to spend more time defending vaccines and trying to convince parents to have their children vaccinated. And finally, and most unfortunately, has led some parents to opt out of vaccinations, leaving children vulnerable to vaccine-preventable diseases and even sparking small outbreaks of measles in the United States, which not too long ago was not occurring. Today's program is really more about healthy sexuality, however, and my guests today are Betty Bang, who is a student with the Student Health and Counseling Center at UAA. Hinckley Cahill is Assistant Director of Student Activities at UAA, and Garen Tarr is Director of the Alliance for Reproductive Justice. All three are in the studio with me today. Garen, we did this program about a year ago, and during the same week, you reminded me. Why this week? What's happening?
Well, this is, and thank you, Dr. Woodard, for having us back. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on your show. This is the second annual Healthy Sexuality Week. You're right that last year was the first time we did this. I'm a director for a small nonprofit. Means we need to work in partnership to accomplish our goals. And we went to the university and were able to collaborate on the event last year, a week-long campus-wide event. So this radio program today is our first event for the week this year. We have several other events planned, and I think it's a good opportunity to partner with the university to get information out to students.
And you're going to have a speaker this Thursday.
This Thursday night, we're thrilled that we have Dan Savage coming to Alaska for his first trip. He'll be at the Wendy Williamson Auditorium at 7:30 p.m. This Thursday.
So what are student health centers and counseling centers all about? I went to college. I think I remember going to college, and I remember they had a student health center, which I don't think I ever visited. But so what Let's flesh out what the purpose is. What does the university at least feel the purpose is?
Well, at UAA Student Health and Counseling Center, we provide services for any student that is currently enrolled in six or more credits, and they've paid a student service fee. We provide primary health care services for physical and mental health. This includes diagnosis and treatment of general health and mental health conditions, and education and support to help maintain a healthy lifestyle. We have 20 employees. The majority are nurse practitioners. We also have a physician consultant.
Mm-hmm. From my point of view now, years past college, I think this is an extremely important thing and service that colleges offer. And actually, not all of them do it, I suspect, at the same level. What is the level of understanding of the availability of these services by students in general? Do you have a feeling about that most of them know that it's there and what services are available, or really there's still not a good understanding?
I think sometimes they're still not aware of the services that we offer. We try to do outreach programs. Mm-hmm. That's part of my job, to do health ed campus-wide and outreach. And so this is one way of our Healthy Sexuality Week, also letting them know what's available at our health center.
I would think healthy sexuality is a very, very important part of what goes on health centers and the importance of getting this kind of information out, and correct and appropriate and honest information.
Yeah.
True?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think it's a bigger piece of the individual identity development that every individual goes through during their college years, whether they're coming straight out of high school, coming to a campus that they know or may not know, or even returning back after a number of years of starting the family. Looking at yourself as a person with a sexual drive or in a relationship, and how those things influence who you can be as a whole person, is very important.
So you got a bunch of kids coming out of high school, and maybe kids is not the appropriate thing, but what adolescents are doing is striving for independence. They're trying to understand themselves better as individuals, and yet at the same time, they want to be part of a group. They don't want to be different. So, and then you got a large age range within the college, which relates to social skills, mental skills, experiences, and so forth. So given that framework, I had sent each of you a little note ahead of time, and one of the questions I wanted to make sure we ask, and I think this would be a good way to start the program, what's the single most important issue relating to human sexuality we ought to discuss on this program? And so we'll each ask each of you that and see where it takes us. Garen?
Sure, thanks. I'll start. From our perspective, this fits into our public education program, and we want to make sure that Alaskans on a variety of topics related to reproductive health and healthy sexuality are getting accurate information in a, you know, friendly kind of way, in a safe environment that allows individuals to explore who they are and make good decisions, and in making good decisions really preserve their overall health. So we have an advocacy mission, I think, that is accomplished by working with these folks.
Okay. Hinckley?
I think it's support, showing that no matter who you are at the university, you're going to come in contact with people, services, and resources that will be there to help you through whatever phase it might be that you're exploring, questions you might have, that the university supports that. And getting out there and offering these special weeks or bringing speakers to campus that will show the university is committed to continuing to build ourselves as an aware and supportive community is very important.
Okay. Betty?
I also want to add that, you know, we're in an era where sex can have life or death consequences. You know, we have HIV, we have hepatitis C, we have PID. We have a lot of things that if students aren't protecting themselves, they can, you know, have serious health care issues.
Also, another acronym, HPV. So why don't we define those before we go too much further? HIV, probably everybody understands,
right,
but that's human immunodeficiency virus. It causes the disease AIDS.
Right. And HPV is human papilloma virus, and that there are about 80 different types. And we know that about 8 of them can be precursors for cervical cancer.
And I would hasten to add that as soon as a woman becomes sexually active, they very quickly have evidence that they've become exposed. That virus is the same virus that causes common warts. It's ubiquitous. It's everywhere. So you don't think about that, but it is commonly spread. And we might get back to some of the ways that are now available to prevent it. But
what else did I say? Hepatitis C.
Yeah, and then you said PID.
Oh, pelvic inflammatory disease, which can be caused by chlamydia, for one thing. Others would be HSV, which is herpes simplex virus.
So these are all illnesses that are, for the most part, sexually transmitted. There may be occasionally other ways, but primarily sexually transmitted illnesses. Let me open up the lines now. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Our guests today are from the university and from the Alliance for Reproductive Justice. We're talking about healthy sexuality. If you have questions, comments, or would like to share any experiences with us during the next hour, you can reach us at 550-8433, that's the local number. We have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752, and you can reach us by email at line1, spell it out, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at kska.org. We'll be here for the next 55 minutes or so, and we'll try to answer any questions that you've got. One thing that caught my attention that I would like to bring up, I was listening to a podcast of All Things Considered, dated December 29th, 2008, and I'm going to take a quote from this and then ask for your thoughts. It said, "Gay, lesbian, and bisexual teens and young adults have one of the highest rates of suicide attempts and some other health and mental health problems, including substance abuse. A new study has suggested that parental acceptance and even neutrality with regard to your child's sexual orientation could have a big impact on reducing this rate." What are your thoughts when you hear of that kind of study?
You want me to start off with that one? Well, that's that's really unfortunate news and something that should be upsetting to all of us, and an indication that we definitely need to do a better job in creating a loving and safe community for individuals as they explore who they are. We shouldn't be reading about news like this. And I think Hinckley and Betty can both speak to what individual instances that we're seeing on campus.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very difficult in society as a whole. I don't want to say just at the UAA campus or anywhere in our state, for someone to come out and say, "I am different in the fact that I am a homosexual individual," and that first sort of maybe shock to their own person, or to even have the conversation of, "I just learned my roommate is gay, and should I be comfortable with that? Is it, you know, how does that challenge me as a person living in that situation?" As long as I believe we're staying open to having those conversations with our students, and supporting them when they have those questions, to come out into a safe environment where, you know, not taking a bias at all, but saying we're here to listen, we're here to make sure that you get the resources you need so that it doesn't end up in one of these very tragic instances, then we are contributing to something bigger. And I think that's the only way that we'll start to see some of those statistics come down.
I think that's true. And the other thing is, you know, providing accurate information to maybe counteract all the misinformation and biases that have formed over the years for folks.
And the specific statistics out of this study are in this interview of 200 gay, lesbian, and bisexual young adults, that there was 8.5 times they were more likely to have attempted suicide, 6 times more likely to have high levels of depression, and 3.5 times more likely to use illegal drugs or engage in unprotected sex, kind of a risk-taking behavior. Why would that be? I'm thinking that they're struggling with this issue, is what I'm getting at. I'm thinking I'm different. We just talked about how adolescents don't want to be different, and it's tough and it's hard. And
and you don't want to be ostracized. You don't want to feel different. So they can't help to a large degree the way they may feel. Now, I'm not an expert in this, but that's where my mind goes. And I know if I tell my kids all the time, if I had to get up and sing in front of class all the time, I would run out of the classroom. I would cut my hair off. I would paint my fingernails. I'd do something different because I don't want to get in front of people and sing all the time because the people laugh at me when I sing. Okay, so, I mean, it'd be tough.
And I don't think there's a lot of information out for students to know. Okay, we're told a lot in hetero sexual relationships, how to protect ourselves from STDs. What have we been told if we're gay or lesbian or transsexual?
I think there's a piece about stereotypes in there too, where you're afraid to come out or to show that you are a supporter or an advocate for people who have a different sexual orientation because people say, oh, well, I watched TV and I saw this, or perhaps coming from a different family background where that was just not something that was supported in your own existence, and questioning those things makes you think, who am I as a person? Am I now going against the people who helped to raise me, or am I a bad person because society doesn't fully accept who I am? And that's a piece of especially the LGBT identity development, this idea that your personal identity is so intertwined and sometimes at odds with what everyone else seems to be going through, that you don't ever have to come out and say, I'm heterosexual. Mm-hmm. That's not ever questioned.
I would guess that also, again, based on some statistics that I can recall, that a large number of heterosexual males and females may go through periods, particularly in adolescence, where they wonder about their sexual identity because of, here again, I can't quote the research, but that there is a fairly large percentage of us that have had bisexual, heterosexual, bisexual and homosexual relationships in one way or another. But that doesn't dictate our sexual preference, just those relationships. But they don't, people may not get, adolescents may not be aware of that and may misinterpret those exposures. Is that fair to say? Or am I overstating it?
I think I'd agree, and you know, we have other statistics here in Alaska that indicate, you know, our high rates of interpersonal violence and high rates of sexual assault indicates that, you know, plenty of people are not aware of how to engage in healthy sexual interactions. And so, you know, some of that could be related to sexual identity and, you know, having space to explore that. And if you don't feel like you have that, maybe then, you know, the way you, I guess the way you develop, you know, could be with unhealthy habits. So I think we have to, you know, kind of connect the dots and look for ways that people are trying to express themselves and whether they're looking for help in doing that.
I wanted to just, and I will get off this subject, but I think it's an important one, or at least it is to me. And I think I remember having talked to families who were concerned about sexual orientation of their offspring and researching the best way to approach this. And I'm a lumper, not a splitter, so I remember simple ways to approach it, is that the best advice that I could find repetitively was that parents need to provide unconditional love to their offspring, regardless of their sexual orientation. And I'm sure that's regardless of lots of things, that they need that. And if you are struggling with your sexual preference and you are uncertain and confused and you're not getting unconditional support from your family, it is even more difficult. So what other issues are important for us to talk about today?
Do you want to talk a little bit, Betty, about some of the other services at the health center?
Yeah, we could talk about that. Not only do we see people for, you know, general acute illness, injuries, physical exams, sexually transmitted infection checks, we also see students for mental health issues such as stress and depression, eating disorders, seasonal affective disorders, also alcohol and drug abuse. And another way that we try to reach students is we have a a website that they can go to, the Student Health website. And we also have on that website, we have links to Go Ask Ellis, which mm-hmm. is with Columbia University. It has excellent staff and information on topics, including healthy sexuality. And also we have a Ask Betty link where students at UAA can ask questions anonymously and are answered on the website. We have no idea who wrote the questions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the majority of the questions are about sexuality.
Mm-hmm. Not about drugs, alcohol, and so forth?
No, not as much. A lot of questions about periods, birth control,
and
things like
that. That leads you, here's a leading question, I'll be up front, to guess that there's still a lot of misunderstanding, wrong information, lack of information about sexuality.
There is. There's a lot of lack of information. I hear from students that, you know, in the schools, they don't necessarily hear about what a healthy sexual relationship is. They hear about abstain, and that sex is the most wonderful thing in the world, but abstain. And then when they get to in a relationship, they're like kind of lost. They're like, okay, now what do I do? Mm-hmm. So I think that's one thing that needs to be worked on.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm hesitant to go into this, but I'm so much want to make sure people understand what we know and what we don't know. Is what's the evidence for abstinence as being a successful way of promoting good sexuality and prevention of pregnancy? Not saying that anybody here is pro anything. We're just looking for what's the evidence. Anybody got any comments?
I think one of the things we've been doing is looking for evidence that that's an effective method to deal with sexuality issues, and if that's the most appropriate way, is it indeed having the intended effect? And so you would think that teenage pregnancy rates would go down as a result. Well, just a couple of weeks ago, the newest numbers came out, and after a steady decline, Alaska actually increased. So if those new numbers are an indication of whether what we're doing has been working, then it looks like we're not maybe doing the right thing.
I think in my research, I was looking in that there has been a decrease in adolescent pregnancies, but 87% was due to the use of birth control.
Mm-hmm.
And only about 17% or so could be attributed to abstinence. So are we too conservative in this country about how we approach sex? Is that what we're hearing?
I feel like it's even more hear no evil, see no evil, right? That, as the saying goes, more that it's something we're just not talking about enough at all and kind of having your, you know, sort of disclosed to it. Not that we have any indication that that's a good thing, but that's how we've just been kind of operating. Is it's easier to not talk about it than to have to come to some agreement about what the appropriate way to talk about it is or what the appropriate age group is. I think in our work here with Healthy Sexuality Week at the university, we have a great opportunity because we are working with young adults, college kids, so to speak, but for the first time could be living on their own and, you know, could be making a lot of mature adult decisions. And so, you know, some of those decisions could include whether or not to have kids and how to be safe in their relationship. So it's a good chance for us to reach that group of young adults.
You know, and along the same line, do you think or do you have the evidence that perhaps kids are being better at protecting themselves against sexually transmitted diseases and getting pregnant than perhaps a generation ago?
Well, I don't know about that. We're still, if you look at the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, we're still number two in the nation for chlamydia per capita. Number two, and we've been there since 2004. You know, we have rising rates of gonorrhea, rising increase in pelvic inflammatory disease. And even we've gotten on the charts with syphilis again.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at those numbers and you understand that two-thirds of the STDs are in people under the age of 24, I'm not sure if we're doing a good job.
Well, I want to come back to how we can prevent those particular transmitted diseases in a minute, but let's go ahead and open the lines up again to make sure people know how to get a hold of us. If you've got questions or comments, 550-8433 is our local number, 550-8433. And if you're outside of Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752 is our toll-free number. And you can email us at lineone, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at kska.org. So many illnesses are transmitted sexually, and besides abstinence, what other mechanisms have been shown to be effective that we should mention?
Well, of course, condoms are mm-hmm. out there and dental dams. And I think that's one thing that a lot of teenagers now are in. And young adults and older people are involved in oral sex, and it's not considered sex, and so they don't think of getting sexually transmitted disease. So they're not using condoms. They're not using dental dams. And they are getting, we're seeing an increase in throat cancer from HPV. We're seeing an increase in rectal cancer from HPV. That's another thing also is that now we do have a vaccine to prevent cervical cancer. And, I mean, that's unbelievable. There's Gardasil, and which is available at UAA for students. And it covers four of the most common human papilloma viruses. Two that cause 70% of cervical cancer, and two that cover 90% of the genital warts. And so that's available now for 11 to 26-year-old females only. It's not approved yet for males.
I want to come back to the issue about males. People ask me that question, and perhaps we can shed a little bit of light on that. But first, I'd like to take a caller. Linda, you're on line one.
Thank you. I had a question about an early comment you made about hepatitis C, which I thought was transmitted more likely through IV drug use, tattoos, in other words, blood-to-blood contact, and for lack of a better way to say it, normal heterosexual sexual activities was not likely to be transmitted.
I think that's a good point. Let's see what Betty, who said that, let me see what you have to, how you respond.
So
I'm going to get off the air because I'm driving.
Okay. Do that.
Hepatitis C is more common in the populations that you talk to. But if you have, like, someone who's having intercourse with a IV drug user, if you have intercourse with multiple partners, it's been shown to increase your risk for hepatitis C. And, of course, other ways of hepatitis C, of course, are tattoos and intranasal cocaine. And if you have, of course, if you have intercourse with a partner who's had those things.
Okay. All right, some clarity. But generally, that is an intravenous drug use is the primary way, but there are ways with sexual transmission is the point here. So HPV vaccine is a very significant advance in immunology and in the use of immunizations in that the studies show that a significant percentage, almost an amazing 100% of women who've been given this vaccine are unlikely to get cervical cancer. So now we know that a major cause of cervical cancer is a particular virus that's sexually transmitted. The question comes up, and I don't want to put you all on the spot because you may not know the answers, but the question is, if the girls are getting it from boys, how come we're not giving the boys the vaccine? I can answer that, but I want to know if anybody else can answer it because I think it's an important issue.
I believe that the trials haven't come out yet with the results to see if it is effective.
Yeah, I mean, it's the whole issue of medicine is it's got to be shown to be safe and effective. Will it be safe and effective? It's certainly going to be probably not likely any less safe and probably will be effective, but they're not going to license a vaccine. The FDA, before the studies are done, is obvious as it may be that it should be affected, but it may not be. But it probably won't be any differently from a safety standpoint. Here's a fact from the CDC I gleaned before we came in here. 20 to 25% of women in college report experiencing an attempted or completed rape in college. That surprise anybody?
Sadly, no. I don't.
No.
Based on my experiences with students and even going back, it wasn't that long ago. I was in college myself and living in a house, in a sorority house with 40 women, I would say that's a pretty solid number.
And the situations regarding that, I know in most rapes it's an acquaintance, it's a personal friend, it's somebody you know real well. It's not walking down the street trying to get in your car after a game. It's not the most likely way that happens.
Yeah, I think that's true. Another issue that might be involved oftentimes is drinking and being incapacitated.
Mm-hmm. Another quote that I caught my attention is that, and we've talked about this in the past on this program in various ways, is that in the United States, half, almost half, of all pregnancies are unintended. Comments about that statistic?
Again, not doing a good job at getting information out there, because it's not as if every unintended pregnancy is going to be a real hardship. Certainly there are individuals who are in better position and kids are great, but for the folks who aren't ready or don't have a good situation at that current time, that's going to be a difficult place. And I know, you know, not to get into the abortion conversation, but I know people have feelings, strong feelings on that issue. You know, we keep trying to bring the conversation back to some of these prevention measures, hoping that we can do a better job to get the numbers lower, first of all. But again, remembering that the point is having healthy individuals. And so, you know, a holistic approach, and an entire healthy individual has a healthy sexuality and healthy sexual experiences also.
Besides abstinence, what do you think the average girl beginning in college, maybe their first couple of years, knows about how to prevent unintended pregnancies and what her options are?
I think that students have heard of birth control pills for the most part, and whatever is being advertised on TV at the time is usually what they come in asking for. And whether it be NuvaRing or, you know, whatever is big on TV, they come in and they think that that's, you know, what they need. And then when they do get on birth control, they sometimes forget, well, you know, I need to be using condoms. I also need to think of skin-to-skin contact, where I'm going to get HPV or herpes from skin-to-skin contact.
I think part of that problem is not just women, but men and women have a difficulty in having that conversation with a partner of what is your sexual history? What kind of risk am I putting myself at by taking any kind of action with you as an individual? And I would hope that what we're doing at the university is trying to empower students to kind of take that reflective moment before making a decision that could leave you either scarred physically or emotionally for a very long time. And it does go back to being in a safe environment when you're making those choices, being aware of what you're doing, and having supportive people around you who are going to say, yeah, just because I'm on birth control doesn't mean that you shouldn't be wearing a condom, or, you know, I'm not ready for this. I don't – my unintended pregnancy, I don't want that. I don't want any of those things above.
How many girls in general do you think are aware of the morning after pill?
I think they're becoming more aware of it, and also their partners are becoming more aware of it. And we have, you know, male partners that come in and ask for Plan B for their partners also.
And Plan B is basically just, I'm not the expert here, but from previous shows and research, it's just almost like taking two birth control pills at the same time.
It's progesterone only. There isn't any estrogen in it.
Mm-hmm. And the mechanism of working is some not entirely clear, but do you know any more about how we think that
we think part of it maybe is it prevents implantation.
Mm-hmm. That's what I had heard. Okay. Last year, at this same time, I interviewed Dorian Salat and Marshall Miller, and it was enjoyable. It was quite a good experience. I had heard you say before the program that it was mainly the university students who kind of encouraged the university and yourself, Garen, to kind of do this again this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did a survey of all of the attendees at the events last year, which we felt pretty good just based on attendance. There were record turnout for both events, you know, so getting over 100, 150 students to show up to anything, I think, is a big deal, especially when it's more information related. So we had really good turnout and then did a survey and asked students what kind of programs would they like to see in the future. And this was overwhelmingly the choice. And the second choice was mental health issues and then
nutrition.
And nutrition. So, again, coming back to that idea of, you know, a whole healthy individual, the Student Health and Counseling Centers use that information to do additional programs on those topics. So this is just one of those in that bigger picture of getting good information to the students. And it was good to see their response. It was, real insight into what they were thinking. One of the nice things that happened at last year's events was they took questions from the audience and put them together and were able to sort of put them into categories. And so it was helpful for us to see what kind of questions were being asked. And it was done in a great format so that it was anonymous. And so I think people took it seriously. It didn't seem like any kind of questions that were just to be silly, and really asked questions. And in this big forum, gave the presenters, gave Dorian and Marshall the opportunity to answer the questions with good scientific information. And you know, one person getting their question answered benefited 150 people who were in the room who may or may not have had that same question. But sometimes it's hard to ask.
But the most popular question was about penis size. And so they said, well, here are the 21 questions about penis size. And so a young man afterwards said, you know, I had a lot of questions, you know, that they've really answered. I thought everybody knew these things. And so that's why I was afraid to ask.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what really influenced our committee to reach out and work with other groups across campus to bring Dan Savage up this semester. We still wanted to bring someone who's going to provide such great information, and having the opportunity to bring someone who reflects a different portion of our student population and have those conversations happen on campus, that just opens up to a whole different opportunity for us to showcase that, you know, we're there, we're ready for our students to ask those questions, seek those resources, and hopefully have a better experience overall.
What do you mean? Represents a different group of your student body?
Sure. So Dan himself is a homosexual male who is also a parent. And I think that is such a great dynamic to bring to campus. We're looking now at an individual who can represent the experience of going through some of the very difficult identity development and coming out process mm-hmm. we talked about earlier. And also in a committed relationship now with a young child, UAA has such a diverse profile that that's going to reach out to a great number of our students, helping them to ask questions about what is it like, you know, how do you talk to your parents about coming out? What does that mean? What was it like for you, for them to have that connection? And then even the different part of now that you're in a committed relationship for so many years, how do you keep it new and exciting and make sure you're still healthy as that time goes on.
Any other comments about that?
Well, if any of the listeners are not familiar with Dan Savage and you have a chance to pick up the Anchorage Press, his column is syndicated and featured there each week. And he's been on, you know, if you Google him, you'll find a whole bunch of information. He's been on CSN, MSNBC, Fox News, 2020, and other comedy shows, and is actually the author of four books. And so those will all be available at the event on Thursday night. I think our understanding of the event, just so listeners know, is that he will take questions from the audience. And so I think that'll be fun to see the variety of questions that that people might ask. And for those that are the loyal fans, they know he is open to anything as far as questions go, and he'll tell you what he thinks. So I think it should be a lot of fun to have him on campus and here in the Anchorage community, because it is an event that's open to members of the public as well as the UAA community.
And you don't have to stand up and ask the question. You know, it can be on a note card that you pass in if you don't want to ask it.
And I didn't catch it. Yeah, I'm always thinking about where we're going with the program. It's open to anybody who wants to come, not just UAA mm-hmm. students, at 7:30, you said, Thursday night at the Wendy Williamson Auditorium.
Yes.
Let me remind our listeners, let me give you a phone number again. We're talking about healthy sexuality issues, particularly as it pertains to college and college-age students. But we all can learn something sometime. So if you've got questions or comments, please give us a call. 550-8433 is our local number, 550-8433. Toll free, 1-888-353-5752, and email at lineone, lineone, at kska.org. Many web links are on the KSKA/lineone website if you want to go there and pick them up, particularly the Go Ask Alice website is a particularly good one. There's some websites associated with the government which give you a pretty straight idea about some issues regarding sexually transmitted diseases and sexual health as well. What do we need to say? We've kind of not specifically talked about HIV infections. Is there anything particularly earth-shattering or important to understand about that particular issue? It's certainly a big one. Wasn't around when I was in college, or if it was, we didn't know about it, I should say.
Well, I think one thing that the CDC tells us is that young minority women are being infected in larger numbers. It's probably the fastest growing group.
Okay.
I think what everyone keeps saying is get tested. If you've mm-hmm. had an experience where you could be at risk at all, I mean, you just get tested. Know for your own sake that you are okay. And it can take up to months for a test to come back that shows you that you are infected. And just because you don't have any symptoms that are visually, or you know, your immune system seems like it's a little off, it can take a while. And so get tested. And if your doctor tells you to come back in 6 months and test again, do it. Don't take that risk.
And students can get tested at UAA students. It's free. HIV testing is free.
How about most of the services from a medical standpoint? Is it covered by the students' health insurance? They often get health insurance as part of going to the university. How are the cost issues and also the confidentiality issues? Those are two big issues, I think, that right. must weigh on everybody's mind nowadays.
UAA, unlike many colleges and universities, does not require insurance. Now, UAF, University Fairbanks, does require it, but there is insurance available for students, United Insurance. Students taking six or more credits, there's no charge for office visits for physical health. And so the only charges we have are for any lab tests that would be done. We also have a small pharmacy that with very low-cost medications that we can. So it's very cost-effective health care. And it's also very professional, very caring, and students have the time to come in and discuss issues that are a concern.
For teens and college students, what would each of you say is the most dangerous sex-related activities you think they're going through? Mind if I ask each of you just to see what you say? Garen?
Well, I would just say unprotected sex, I think, is the, you know, because teens are, well, and young adults and the folks that we're dealing with who are just in that transition period are, you know, maybe not living on their own, so looking for opportunities when they arise and you know, kind of making quick decisions, not thinking things through. I think unprotected sex in that younger population is probably the biggest deal.
And I, right off with that, I would also say that sex with multiple partners at the same time. I see a lot of students are coming in and saying, you know, I'm hooking up, I'm having sex or doing these other things with more than one person right now. And that's, I think, a decision that you're facing some more elevated risks now if there's more than one person involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they'll talk about friends with benefits. And they're having, these are people that they have sex with. Yeah. The other thing I think of is the whole idea of oral sex not being considered sex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that the students now, when asked about that, they don't consider that as having had sex.
No. And of course, alcohol.
Uh-huh.
Alcohol use and not remembering if you had sex, you know, who the partner was, things like that.
You have an advantage over me, perhaps, as a pediatrician, when I see teenagers, in that there's often another family member, let me put it that way, in the room with me that I sometimes have to ask to be excused, and that causes some problems. How do you address the person, for example, who comes in and says, "I'm having multiple sexual partners." I mean, it's a perfect opportunity to start, in my mind, to be asking about some mental health issues.
Yeah,
I'm thinking.
Exactly.
Am I wrong?
No. I think that's a great time to ask those questions. And luckily, we also have mental health providers too that I can walk across the hall with mm-hmm. the student that I might maybe think is participating in very dangerous behaviors
mm-hmm.
and have them talk to the folks.
So why would I bring up mental health issues with someone who's having multiple sexual partners? Hinkley, you kind of smiled
sure.
when I said that. Maybe everybody understands that.
I think maybe not. sometimes it has to do with self-esteem, with why you are deciding to base yourself off of how many people you're now having sex with or making you know, those decisions to have an intimate relationship with. Other times it's that you have been told by whomever, your roommates, this is how you are going to feel good about being here. This is what's going to make your transition better if you have a boyfriend, a girlfriend, someone to hook up with. And sadly, that's not the case. I don't believe it's the case anyway. It's tough. I think it's really hard for someone to come into the university setting who this is the first time sort of having the freedom to put themselves out there and not understanding that those situations have repercussions. And maybe your decision to have some fun isn't as unbridled as mm-hmm. you'd like to think so, and is because you have a deeper psychological issue occurring.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm always qualifying myself as not being a professional psychologist, but if someone came in and told me or admitted or questioned why they may be having multiple sexual partners, I would think that would be pretty doggone unusual. I mean, unusual in the sense that if you know, why would you want to come talk to me about it? It's almost a crying out for attention, and not purposefully, not thought out that way, but they're struggling about that, and it's not something that you would think people who were particularly proud of that would be willing to share with people.
Yeah,
so they're saying, hey, do you think I need some help?
Or oftentimes they're coming in there and they're running things by you to see what you're going to say, you know. And so if I'm saying, you know, this doesn't look like you're doing very safe behavior here, you know, sometimes the And I'm saying something different that their peers might be, the group that they're hanging out with.
Mm-hmm. And
so that's helpful.
You know, with Betty, they come in and make an appointment with, in my situation, I'm talking with outstanding student leaders on campus. And all of a sudden we see a change in the way they are connecting with the group they're a part of or their academics. And it reveals that they've had a negative experience in a relationship. A sexual experience that has been less than healthy, that there's something that those are the ways that I lead into those factors to understand there's something else. So it's hopefully providing students with someone who will listen, but still quite scary that it would take them to come in for a conversation about why they're not doing well in classes or something, for me to understand that they've been through a terrible personal experience.
We opened the program almost at the beginning with a question that I raised about the association in one study of sexual preference issues and a higher risk of suicide, depression, alcohol abuse, other substance abuse, and dangerous behaviors. It doesn't have to be, as you've alluded to, Hinckley, a homosexual relationship. It can be a perceived disturbing relationship in one way or another. And we've also already mentioned that, unfortunately, women do, for various reasons, are victims of an unwanted sexual advance at times. And that can be very distressful for women, I would think. So all of these are issues that can raise this issue of mental health and alcohol abuse and substance abuse as well.
Well, and you got to think about these kind of things happening in someone's life. I mean, who can you really talk to? It's going to sometimes be harder to talk to the people who love you the most, who, your parents or, you know, other members of your family. And so having someone in the university community that's another community that you're a part of, and you know you can get good information and then hopefully have a positive experience to find out about these other resources, maybe encourages people to make those steps throughout their life, you know. And so in some ways hoping to instill good decision making and good thinking about personal health.
And I don't think we're saying it has to be a university professional. I think the biggest piece of my position is looking at the students who are in that great position to be an advocate, to become someone that can be a peer-to-peer resource. I don't think a student's going to be comfortable coming into my office and saying something sometimes. It takes them knowing that they can go and reach out to a fellow student. And that's, again, the great opportunity of being at the university right now, to empower those students to get out, become an advocate, and continue the cycle of awareness and support.
Okay. Let me give our number again, 550-8433. We've only got about 5 to 6 minutes or so. If you've got questions or comments, 550-8433. Also a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And you can email at lineone, L-I-N-E-O-N-E, at kska.org. Betty, I had mentioned previously the issue of confidentiality, which we didn't address, and I heard Garen mention, you know, the safety and being able to talk to someone. Do you think students understand the confidentiality issue as you understand it, and what is that?
I do think that's something that students understand, because they come in, you know, they're not coming in with their parents like you would see perhaps in your setting. You know, they're coming in on their own, And we have statements of the confidentiality and HIPAA rules that they acknowledge before we ever see them, that I can't share this with anyone without their permission.
Mm-hmm. So I tell my patients that under no circumstances will I share information that you tell me in confidential way, except one thing. That's if you're going to hurt yourself.
Right.
I make it very clear. If you're thinking about doing something to yourself, that I have to do whatever I can to stop that. I often find myself saying, listen, if you think you're pregnant and you tell me not to talk to your folks, I'm not going to talk to them, but let's think this thing through. How is it try to bring them back to the rationality that if you are, or you're getting tested, and then we got this other problem about who's going to pay for this visit and what's this visit about. And I find, I think, fortunately, a large number of parents that understand this issue, but occasionally it can get kind of difficult, whereas I would love to be in a college situation where I don't have to ask a parent to, would you mind letting me talk with your son or daughter by myself?
Which is, I mean, maybe nice, too, that you have the parent that close, because the information that it may be Betty or I might provide with a student could end right there after they leave our door. Their decision to share the information with someone who can help them through that situation from a family standpoint may not be happening. And, you know, they could be thousands of miles away at some point and dealing with that on their own. So We of course encourage them to find their community here and get that support or at least the information they need to take the next step.
I love to bring up myths. Anybody want to bring up a myth that they think is common that we haven't talked about?
Well, I guess one that I hear a lot is with birth control, and I'll say, well, what, you know, are you trying to get pregnant? And they'll say no. And I say, well, what method of birth control are you using? Well, we do withdrawal. We do pull out. And I can't tell you how often I have to tell students how ineffective that is and that that's not a good method of birth control. Let's look at another option.
Okay. Any other myths that jump off the old gray cells? There's a while you're thinking about that we did get a caller who has asked, how can supportive parents emphasize using protection? I'm assuming it's protection from pregnancy and sexually transmitted disease.
So, you know, I really think you need that it's fine to speak directly with your kids. And you know, you just start from when they're young, you just start talking about, you use correct anatomical terms, you know, mm-hmm. and you start talking about, you know, as you get older, you know, you might have feelings that are going on. And I think you start talking about sex, you start talking about STDs, and they're seeing these things in movies, they're reading about it in books, you know, it's part of their everyday culture. And probably a lot of students will say, young students in high school say, how do you get your information on sex? They're going to say, I Google it. Mm-hmm. But yeah. It'd be nice if they could get accurate information from their parents also.
Right. And I think it is difficult for some parents to address that. We, for a long time, had a nurse practitioner that had a young female class, and that was a big part of the major topics of discussion. And I'd forgotten about that until we just started talking about it. And it was a hugely successful opportunity for mothers and daughters to come in and do the same thing. A little bit younger age group, but to talk about periods and menstruation and how you get pregnant and how you prevent that and all the myths that are flying around. And I guess we don't have to say that everything on you Google is going to be accurate.
Exactly. That's why I'd rather have the parents telling them rather than Google.
We really only have about 30 seconds, and I often like to end by asking you to, or my guest, to say what's the most important message we want to leave here today. So a couple of 10, 15, 20 seconds, what do you think?
Well, everyone needs to learn more by coming to see Dan Savage on Thursday night.
Okay, and go to these websites. There are plenty. The Go Ask Alice has got very reliable information. There's some websites to the National Institutes of Health that can provide some good websites also. Thanks to each of you for taking the time to be here. It's been a real pleasure. Next week we'll begin discussing adolescent substance abuse with Brian Wilson. Brian is a treatment supervisor for Raven's Way Adolescent Treatment Program in Sitka, Alaska. And he'll be my guest next week. So tune into your health and learn more on Monday, February 23rd. Actually, I got to remind you, next week we're not going to be here for, I think it's President's Day. It'll be February 23rd at 2 p.m. And repeating that same evening at 7 p.m. on FM 91.1.
Your Health Connection. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Or email us at line1@ksKA.org. Additional information on today's show topic, including relevant website links, will be posted along with audio of today's program on our website at ksKA.org/line1. CD copies of this program can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.